sit down, boys. Have I got a treat for you?
Fighting the fight when it comes to technology. We are the knights of the kingdom of geekery. We rise up when it comes to the challenge of discussing all this nerd knowledge. We are the digital soup. We are the digital soup. We bring information with lots of laughter. Tune in now if that's what you're after. Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. With Jason, Adam, and usually Dave.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Digital Soup, the only podcast that's perfectly satisfied with just a single Lullagram.
A what?
I don't know what that is.
A single Lullagram?
Lullagram. I don't need two of them.
Oh, is that like a math
instead of
geometry
a parallelogram?
Joke?
Exactly.
Oh.
Wow. I thought we were geeks here.
Da, 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 da.
Well, that was okay. So you guys didn't like that one, so let's go ahead and start this one over here. I'm not actually starting it over. They're gonna get a twofer. Our listeners are getting a twofer today.
Oh,
so
boy.
Here we go. The only podcast that is determined to visit every city on the Spice Girls reunion tour.
Yeah. What?
All around the world?
Yeah. So what one
spice
do you guys
up
like
your
better?
Life?
The single Lullagram or the Spice Girls reunion tour?
Listen to Jason all demanding. What do you want better? Tell me what you want.
Yeah, what do
really,
you like
really
better?
Want.
No, if I was demanding, I wouldn't care what you liked. I'd just give you what I want.
You missed my joke.
Oh, I did.
I got
what'd you,
it.
What'd you
I
say?
It.
I'm sorry.
I said he's being all demanding. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
Oh, dang it. Well, it's because I started
he
talking
wants,
like
an
idiot.
He wants a... he wants a...
Zig a zig...
We
sound so smart.
Zigzags. Is that like the where you roll your own cigarettes?
I have
is
no
that
idea.
Zigzag? Or was it Ziggy from Quantum Leap? I don't know.
Could
Who
be.
Knows? Who knows?
Well, everybody, you know, we're getting off on a tangent here, which we are, you know, apt to do on this show. Well, my name's Jason, and joining me in the virtual studio today is Adam and usually Dave. Hey, what have you guys been up to this week?
Well, I built a firewood shed outside.
That's better than inside.
Exactly.
You wouldn't want all that wood stored inside because it could cause a fire.
Also, mice tend to nest in wood piles. So.
And spiders and snakes and
various other nasty little critters.
Mm-hmm.
What about millipedes? Think some millipedes could be in that wood?
Yep, millipedes, centipedes.
I don't like
thousand
millipedes.
Peds.
Yep. Oh, now we're switching
or 100 peds.
Exactly. Lots of peds.
I bet you did some grilling, right? That's what I think all of
actually,
us did.
Memorial Day was kind of wet out there, so I had family over. We did homemade pizzas.
Ooh. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
Got a pizza stone. So.
It was beautiful here. It was, I think it was like 86 Memorial Day. So, yeah, I grilled out. It was nice. I mean, we had a little rain early, but then it got really nice.
Nice.
What about you, Dave? What'd you have going on?
I had a lot of campfire time, various family events, different family groups, you know, one night and the next night. So spent Saturday night with my parents' side of the family at a big bonfire thing we had, a bunch of family up. Sunday, spent it with my wife's side of the family around another big bonfire at their seasonal campsite. And Monday, it was kind of crappy weather, and so we just kind of hung out at home, low-key, got some projects done. In
Thor?
Fact, No. When Adam mentioned working on projects outside, just before we hit record, I was actually outside. We're measuring. We're looking at possibly putting a deck on the back of our house,
Ooh.
A small patio kind of deck.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So it's one of those ones because of the way our house is set up. It's only going to be like maybe 6 inches off the ground. So almost more of a patio than
large enough for like a hot tub, you think?
Yeah, we're looking at a decent size out from the house. I mean, probably something like a 17 by 17 square, nice. Something like that. Nice size, plenty of room for the grill and some places to sit, and the fire pit will still be off, you know, on the ground. But So just kind of getting measurements and stuff together there. And then, you know, of course, watched our movie, watched a few other things as well. I wanted to go watch Brightburn this weekend, and I just
oh,
could
I
not
see
get
that
time.
So bad.
Yeah, I
it
didn't
looks
have time
so
to
good.
Get there.
you know, I mentioned that that we had some pizzas, but what is better to eat for breakfast? Is it pizza? Is it cereal? It turns out it's actually pizza. Jason, tell us more.
Yeah, I'm curious how this made the list.
I was always right about this. Growing up, I always loved having cold pizza for breakfast. Am I right, guys? Did you like that?
Negative.
Really? Oh, man. If you had leftover...
I didn't mind it, but I preferred cereal when I was a kid.
Not for me, man. I would absolutely love getting a cold piece of pizza, especially that bowling alley pizza. Oh, that was so delicious cold.
Yeah. Bowling alley pizza.
Yeah, but I'm still not a pizza for breakfast guy.
Well, you should be.
Let me rephrase that. I'm still not a cold pizza guy. I will eat leftover pizza, but usually I have to heat it up.
See, you can't. If you say you microwave that, I'm going to slap you in the face right now, Dave.
Microwave it.
You have to.
No, you got to throw it back in the oven. That's the only way to do it.
If I've got more than a piece or two, I'll throw it in the oven. But
unfortunately, a cooked pizza cheese does not perfectly recook again.
That's true.
True.
Here's a cool tip. You could try it out. You can actually reheat your pizza, throw it in a skillet.
Yeah.
A skillet?
Yep, because it redoes the crust on the bottom awesomely.
Well, yep. So does the oven.
Yeah, but
then you add a little
right
bit
down
of
on the
oven
rack.
Slower. Add a little bit of fresh shredded cheese on top of it, and you're right back in business.
Or order a new pizza.
Oh man, I'm getting hungry. But let's jump into the story here. Now, what is going on here is I don't know why anybody would even think of a story like this. What's better, pizza or cereal? Nutritionists have looked at this, and because of the amount of sugar that is found in most of the cereals today, they have actually come to the conclusion that pizza is actually a better breakfast food than cereal is, because all you're really getting is some grain and a ton of sugar. Of course, the milk that you pour into it. But with pizza, I mean, you're getting your grains, you're getting your meat group, you're getting your cheese group, dairy group, I should say. There's not just a cheese group.
Dairy group.
Yeah, you're getting vegetables, you're getting everything on this. So actually, nutrition-wise, a bowl of sugar cereal, be it like, what is it, like Cocoa Puffs or whatever, is not as healthy for you as a slice of pizza is for breakfast.
That I would agree with, because most of those, if you're talking like Golden Grahams or, you know, regular kids box cereal, it's pretty well known that those are all fairly heavy, just sugar.
Pretty well known that they're pretty delicious.
And delicious, yeah. But it's not like they're known for being health food.
No.
Because you could also throw in that mix something like grape nuts or...
Say Kashi, because that tastes like cardboard.
It's granola. You know, any of those kind of cereals, and probably get some more health benefits out of it than pizza, if we're being honest. Or a good bowl of oatmeal. I mean, same thing.
You know what? I'm going to go with the pizza, though. I have to totally agree with this nutritionist. Now, this is from Chelsea Ammer from CDN. I don't know what that stands for. The Centers for Disease Control, maybe? I don't know.
CDN? Yep. Centers for Disease Control.
Center for Delicious Nutella.
You know what? I never really cared for Nutella. I tried it once.
I get a kick out of Now You See It All Over, but they can't use the Nutella name, so it's got to be just called hazelnut spread, you know?
Yeah, oh, you mean the knockoffs spread. You're talking
about.
Yeah.
Well, you see it even in a lot of candy bars and stuff now. They're the new hazelnut spread candy bar
from
Snickers.
A CDN is a certified dietitian nutritionist.
I knew that.
That clearly makes sense when
that's
we
just
look
not
at
as
the
funny
article.
As what I said, though.
To say that they worked for a credential? Yeah, that's a doctor. He works for an MD.
Yes.
I'm just kidding, Jason.
Well, you know what?
Screw you, man.
I think your computer's starting to mess up. I think you need to, you know, change your NIC card.
Yeah, right.
Hey,
I will after I go to the ATM machine and get some money out.
What redundancy. NIC stands for network interface card. So you're saying network interface card. You're saying automatic teller machine. Come on, keep up with us.
Hey, you know what's pizza, even if you're not a fan of pizza for breakfast, it's still probably better than an Impossible Burger.
Oh my God.
If Burger King's doing this,
who cares?
I might have to try it and see what Dave's rant was all about.
You know,
maybe Dave miscooked it.
No, yeah, I don't know how you could miscook it. Here's how I cooked it. I heated a pan up, Mm-hmm. I put burger in pan.
Yes, go on.
I seasoned it with salt and pepper, keeping mm-hmm. it basic because I wanted to see how it tasted. I flipped burger when one side was done, let the other side cook, put burger on plain bun with a slice of cheese melted on top, put the top of the bun on, and ate. I don't know how you could miscook that. Now, I'm going to say this. I had the Impossible Burger 2.0, and it was terrible, as we all know by my big rant.
Was it the 2.0 or was it an old 1.0?
No, it was the newest gen. Might have even had a firmware upgrade to 2.1.1. I don't know. It was the recent Impossible Burger, their newest one. But I had someone else, a listener, tell me they were listening to a radio program recently where the host did a blind taste test between regular burgers and Impossible Burgers. And on that blind taste test, they chose the Impossible Burger as the winner. And now everyone's going nuts over this yep. Burger King Whopper. I call shenanigans somewhere.
No,
along
Dave.
The way.
I called this when you did your first rant on your taste test of your Impossible Burger. Mm-hmm. I believe your friend went out to the yard, cut some moss off a tree, and sent it to you and told you that was an Impossible Burger.
It was definitely not moss. Okay,
let's take a look at this story here. Now, what this is, they're talking about the Impossible Burger at, of course, Burger King. And they did a test in the St. Louis area. It was a 29-day test, and it was at 59 different eateries in the St. Louis area. And check this out. Foot traffic increased by 18.5% in that market. Now, compared to all the other markets where Burger King is, there was a decline in foot traffic by 1.75%. So not only did this one not lose 1.75 like all the other locations were, but it gained 18.5%, which means people are going crazy over this Impossible Burger, and they're not just eating it once. They're going back every day and getting it.
Or, more likely, in my opinion, what it means is that everyone knows that burger was there, and they wanted to see for themselves what it was all about. So they're seeing a boost in traffic from the fact that it's a new and something different. We're going to try this out. Show me what happens after a year or 2 years when people realize how god awful terrible it is.
But is it god awful terrible?
In my very humble burger loving opinion, yes. It's an abomination that should never cross anybody's lips. It should be instantly thrown right in the garbage. And if you spend your money buying this, you've got to seriously question your okay. whole life.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. I don't know if Adam's going to be in the same boat as me, but if one of my local Burger Kings does bring the Impossible Whopper here, I will definitely give it a try.
Well, I gave it a try too.
Oh, I understand. You yep. you tried a homemade burger. Maybe you screwed mm-hmm. something up. I don't know. Well, I don't know.
No, he just described his process. It sounded pretty
cut right and dry.
On. The only difference at Burger King is that they might be flame broiling it, which might add a different element.
Yeah, maybe mm-hmm. they're soaking it in fry grease.
I would also try it if it shows up.
See?
But we shall
see. And Dave?
No, try it doesn't mean I endorse it yet.
No, I think you would have to give it a try too, just, you know, in case you want to eat crow, you know, because
no, I don't. I think that would be
no,
a false statement.
No, there's no
statement.
Crow in it. It's crow free.
Yeah, yeah. That would be a false statement. I would not have to give it a try. I already
you
went
have
through that
to. For the show, man. For the show.
Nope, I already did that once.
So, you guys, we talk about cutting the cord a lot on this show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Something's back with its cord still intact, and that's a matter of fact.
Oh, it's me. I'm a baby. I just came out, and I'm still attached to mommy.
That's all for us, folks. Have a great week, guys.
We hope you've enjoyed our run here yep. on Digital Soup.
We're going to call it quits. No, the Microsoft Classic IntelliMouse has returned with its cord still intact. Now, the difference between this and the original, it's very cosmetic. Textured finish on the side looks cool. You can change the color of the LED tail light. But there's also a few updates inside, including improved
image
tracking.
Did you say you could
sensor.
Change the color of a tail light?
Yep, it's got a tail light for the mouse tail.
All right. right.
It's not at the cord side. It's at the side where you put your palm.
Oh, the side that goes under your palm.
I know what you mean now. I was trying to, I'm looking at my mouse because I still use a corded mouse on my desk, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, what would a tail light be? But now I understand. Don't
they just
under
have
your
an
palm.
LED at the heel of the mouse, basically. Yeah, but they've got an improved image tracking sensor to detect more subtle movements, improved tactile response from all the buttons and scroll wheel. They're not releasing it as a throwback or a retro product for those that are nostalgic for old beige desktop PCs, according to Gizmodo. It still looks like a modern piece of hardware, but it's $60.
Oof.
Well, if you can live with a cord again. $60 for a corded mice, usually you see that in like high-end gaming mice and stuff like that.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. I still use, I did recently buy a wireless mouse and keyboard, but I could not use the mouse because no matter what setting I put on, I was getting all kinds of lag in games. Like when we were trying to play that Left 4 Dead 2, I had to switch back over to my corded mouse because I was getting major lag for some reason.
That's why I'm still using mine, because back when we were playing Ark even, I would run into problems all the time with my corded mouse or my wireless mouse. So I got rid of it.
Yeah. And I don't know about you two, but I did purchase a IntelliMouse back in the day when they had first come out. I loved the heck out of that mouse. I used it forever. And when I mean forever, I bet you I used that for almost a decade, the same mouse.
Right.
It was a very nice one. And then when it finally bit the dust, I went to go look for another one and they no longer made it. So this is pretty cool that I'll be able to get another one. Now, they did release one, I believe, back in 2016, but I think it was wireless, and I think that's what kept me from doing it. But now the cord is back. Back.
So are you going to consider getting one of these as well as like a mechanical keyboard?
I'm probably definitely going to get one.
Probably
Probably
thinking about it.
Yes. What about you guys? Did you ever own an IntelliMouse?
I don't think I had that specific one, unless it's one that came with a machine. I never bought it specifically that I remember.
I've used them at work and there, but
I don't know what it was about it. I mean, I guess it was my first mouse that had four buttons, so it was a pretty big deal. And then the ergonomics of it was really nice. I really liked it. So definitely give
it a
try. I
would think about it, yeah.
If you could go to like a Best Buy or something once it released and just, you know, use it a little bit on one of their systems, you know, see what you like. I mean, $60, it sounds like a lot, but like I said, I got about a decade out of the one I had. $60 a decade is not very much.
Yeah, they do seem to last a long time. A lot of the Logitechs are, you know, the $15 mice, they're pretty cheap, but they'll only last you a few years.
Yeah.
If you can get long haul out of it, you're gold.
I'd consider it definitely, especially if it's comfortable to use, because I use it a lot for my editing and stuff too. So,
mm-hmm. Now you all use your Slate a lot for editing though, don't you?
No,
you don't.
No, I a graphics tablet. You mean?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I bought one here. When did I buy that? Midwinter somewhere. I got a deal. It's not the high end Wacom tablets, but it's I forget what brand it is. I have it in front of me, but it's under my thing that I slide out. I don't use it that often. I need to take some time and get it set up because there's some things I need to do to tweak in Photoshop, how it handles settings. So it's not trying to be as rigid. So it picks up on the flow of my movements better. And I'd like to use it. And it's just a learning curve that I haven't had time to sit down and work into my editing workflow yet.
All right. Hey, did you pick up one of the new flat clickers?
Flat clicker.
Flat clicker?
No.
It has it's flat, you know, and it like 3D and it has like lights. It's a flat clicker. Okay, you definitely have to YouTube flat clicker.
Yeah, I don't know.
I did
what
post
you're
this on
about.
Our Digital Soup page and people thought it was pretty hilarious. So look that up later, I guess. But flat clicker.
clicker.
All right.
You know, usually we would take a little break here and do our unsigned music spotlight, but I think Jason's got something to say a little bit about this.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta say it. I put it in there so you could do your voice.
For those that have enjoyed the unsigned music spotlight segment of our show, it is with great vengeance and furious anger. Wait. No, we're gonna be announcing the end of our 1-year experiment. We've collaborated with some great bands during this year, and we want to thank them for taking this ride with us. Music has always been a passion for all three of us, so even though Unsigned Music Spotlight won't be a part of the Digital Soup Prime, it might be seen again someday. I don't know. But no official announcement on that, just a teaser. But at this point, I think, Jason, you can probably articulate a little better, you know, why we're going to be kind of pressing pause or ending this one.
Okay. Well, June 6th is actually our official one-year anniversary of the Digital Soup Unsigned Music Spotlight segment. We have, you know, a few dozen bands we've worked with, some great tracks over the year. And it just got to the point to where it was a lot of extra work on my part. And, you know, I know you guys are going to say, hey, this guy's lazy. But, you know, trying to research the different bands and then, you know, collaborating with them, coordinate with them. I had, you know, for everybody that was on the show, I had to get, you know, our waivers signed. Sometimes it was pretty difficult because, I mean, these are bands and a lot of times they have a lot of gigs. You guys know, you get both in bands and they just, you know, they're not around and stuff. And I'd send emails for months and I'd finally hear, oh, sorry, I just, you know, finally saw this or whatever. So it's just, it was a lot of work. And I, you know, I figured, you know, why don't I spend more time on the actual show than doing this? We love music and possibly do like an offshoot, you know, with the Unsigned Music Spotlight, you know, presented by Digital Soup Productions, maybe later. But right now, yeah, just kind of putting it on the back burner, so to speak, and maybe revisit it someday. But I mean, nothing against the bands or anything like that. We had a lot of fun. It's just right now, I just don't feel that I can, you know, dedicate the time. Unless, hey, one of you guys want to pick this up? Start doing all the, doing it, finding the bands.
I gotta go. Don't ask us that on the show.
I was
sound like dicks.
I'll say no. I don't. I've got my my hands full enough doing this show and other
three shows.
Yeah. Well, I only have one other show.
Well, you're on a lot of shows.
Yeah, so. I do go guest over and stuff other times. But my favorite part about this whole announcement, I do have a favorite part.
Okay, what was it?
It's that we as a show are making a decision to stop the Unsigned Music Spotlight for now. We've talked about it and everything else, but we're doing so with great vengeance and furious anger. Like, we're so, who are we seeking vengeance on, and who are we so mad at?
I 100% just put that in there because I wanted Adam to do a Samuel L. Jackson voice.
I don't know how to do a Sam Jackson voice.
Well, you know, the one thing is, though, in all seriousness, with the Unsigned Music Spotlight, it's nice because we could insert some music in, and it was a lot of work for you as far as getting the releases and all that stuff. We can't just start adding in other music, but I think the one thing we can do, because it's something we all enjoy music so much, it would not surprise me if we start adding in, you know, a little more music discussion at times, maybe not every week, but it opens up the door to have that music itch scratched in another way, possibly, too, so...
And a little teaser on that, Dave, I've actually in the very early stages of planning an all music episode, and I figured you guys wouldn't be upset about it in the future here, an all music episode. So stay tuned for that. Another little teaser.
You're all just right. A big tease.
And
tonight.
Speaking of little teasers, Dave, you want to let us know what we're going to do now?
Yeah, hit that music. All right, so it is that time. We are sitting down for another super review. Now, last month, what did we do? Willow last time?
I believe so, yes.
Well, technically, we did Avengers Endgame. That was a special bonus. But our last official super review, I believe, was Willow. And Adam, you had picked Sicario this week.
You got that right.
And so you had seen the movie before, right?
Yes.
All right, so this was back from 2015. What would you call it? CIA, FBI, drug cartel kind of action movie, right?
Yeah, it's a thriller. It's
I mean, we could be lazy. I mean, here's what IMDb says about it. It's an idealistic FBI agent is enlisted by a government task force to aid in the escalating war against drugs at the border area between the U.S. and Mexico. Not a great description, but We saw this. Jason, had you ever seen the movie before?
I had not, but yeah. Another one of your descriptors, which is completely inaccurate, is action movie.
Yeah.
And not to say it wasn't a great movie and there weren't, you know, moments where there could be a little bit of action, but it was more of a drama, just a straight thinking drama. I mean, it was, I'm going to say right now, I really enjoyed the movie. I didn't think I was when Adam mentioned it. I'm like, ugh. And as you guys know, like the week before, I'm like, can we just not do it?
No, or? here was Jason's great idea, right? listeners need to hear this because this is not the first time he's tried to finagle his way into getting out of watching a movie for Super Reviews. You know, we all know about the fiasco with Bridges of Madison County. Well,
yes.
This movie, he says, I've got a great idea, guys. What if every Super Review, one of us doesn't actually watch the movie and just pretends like they did, and then the other two have to watch the movie and then see if the audience can guess which one of us didn't actually watch it. I'll go first the first week and show you what I mean. That's hint, the hint. Level. It's going to.
You should have used that one for Bridges of Madison County.
I still would have said no. No, this movie, it's not like what was the crazy shaky action camera one we watched?
Hardcore Henry.
Hardcore Henry. It's not action on that sense where it's you know, all out start to finish action. I still would classify this as an action movie because there is a lot of action sequences, but it's all FBI, CIA, cartel, you know, gangster kind of related. But like you said, a lot to think about. So,
yeah. See, I look at it differently. When I look at an action movie, I think more of like a John Wick or a Crank or like a Hardcore Henry. I think of those as action movies, like full on adrenaline, slapping you in the face every 2 seconds in case you're falling asleep type movie. where this is more cerebral. It's this
one wasn't just like eat popcorn, watch movie,
right? All right, so why don't we, before we get into the story itself and in the proper review here, like I said, this is released in 2015. You guys want to go through who the director, writer, actors, stars, everything are?
Let's have Adam do it since it was his pick.
So this was directed by Denis Villeneuve.
It's Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, God. So this was directed by Denis Villeneuve. I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it. Your guy's name's Dennis, not Denis.
It's Denis Villeneuve.
Okay.
We'll just go
Written
there.
By Taylor Sheridan and starring Emily Blunt. Josh Brolin as Thanos. Benicio del Toro as the Collector.
Yes.
So we've got some fine actors in here. We've got a beautifully shot movie.
Well, and we'll
be getting into some of that stuff.
It is.
That's one credit I don't have listed here, but it's the cinematographer that's working with the director. Roger Deakins is his name. And he's partly to give, he's probably one of the people to give tons of credit to as far as the look of this movie.
Right. So, well, let's get into this a little bit more. Of course, as always, all of our Super Reviews are full of spoilers. Why would you listen to a review if you didn't see the movie?
Exactly.
This opens up with, you know, Emily Blunt in the FBI. They're storming a house, and they are looking for hostages, I believe. And she has a near miss with a brush with death from a guy that tries to take her out with a shotgun. She kills him, but he pops a hole in the wall, and inside the walls are all these bodies. This is a gruesome film. And this stuff was really shocking. And so as they keep digging out stuff, you know, there's just body after body after body. And this was all about this. It was all related to cartel action. So she gets picked up by a different group who wants her as a consultant. This is Josh Brolin's character, who basically brings her in as the consultant to go down to what they say is Texas, but actually into Mexico. And they extract somebody to get information with the ultimate long goal of going after some head honcho guy down in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie takes you on quite a ride. You're kept in the dark as to what's happening, kind of like her character is and her partner. Now, to me, this one of the things I like about this movie, it is beautifully shot, of course, all that stuff, but it kind of makes you on the edge of your seat, uncomfortable and anxious the whole time. You don't know what's going to happen. They're in, you can kind of feel, to me, you could kind of feel the danger when they were, especially like the when they're driving into Juarez to go extract the person and driving out. That was one of my takes from this. They're hitting the tunnels, all this stuff. There's just always in danger.
Yeah.
I felt the same.
That whole border crossing when they went and got that one guy is just, it was amazing how they, everything was coordinated, how they met the local,
the state police. Yeah. In Mexico.
Just the way they rode in the back of those pickup trucks. It was like every single one of them was the same. One was straight up, dead center, right by the cab of the truck. And the other one was hanging off the right side. And every single vehicle, I don't know if you noticed that, but every single one of those pickup trucks, they were in mm-hmm. the same way. So that must have been how they're trained. Yeah, same configuration. Every single one of them, that is the way they ride in those. So I thought that right. was pretty sweet. And then, like Dave said, and Adam a couple of times now, is just, I wish I was better at critiquing stuff, but the way this movie was shot was just amazing. I mean, everything was crisp, and it just the way the camera moved just the scenery and how they blocked everything. It was just, I don't know, it just almost yep. seemed like perfect. There's the way they did it, the stylization of it was just great.
It was great. There's a scene where they're down in the tunnels, and a lot of the cinematography is just kind of FLIR camera or night vision.
Night and thermal vision, yeah.
And it would switch between really, really dark, and all of a sudden you'd see that contrast and some of the action in there. It was just cool.
Can I give you the first... dropping some flick facts since you brought that up here.
Yep.
Now the thermal vision shots, they were filmed with an FLIR SC8300 thermal vision camera. They were not added in post-production. It was actually right. filmed through those cameras.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That a lot of times cool. they'll just add that in post, like what's the big one, the Predator. Oh, that was all sure. done in post.
Solarized, yeah.
So one of the other things with this whole movie, you never really know who's really good.
Yeah.
There's so much gray area with what's right and wrong. And even down to the very end of it, it's exactly the same way where it's like, you know what? This is a messy world. And one of my takeaways from this, as I was thinking about it, you know, you watch a Marvel movie and you think about Thanos and all this stuff. You don't feel that he's as big of a monster or a threat as you do from just the feeling of being in the car ride in that Juarez area, or, you know, some of those right. things where it's like, this is, human beings can be more evil than anything.
Well, yeah. And
some of the stuff these guys do,
you see them, you know, taking those SUVs and all the police escort into this prison to get this guy and escort him out. And along the way, they're passing nothing but, you know, decapitated and hanging bodies of men and women.
That was just, sick.
Just brutal gnarly. Stuff happening. But then they intercut that with there's this storyline that weaves through, which ends up ultimately getting resolved towards the end of the film. It's just a random like side story where there's the police officer from Mexico who ends up being, you know, he's working for the police, so he's working for the cartel. And you see all these scenes, they're quiet, family, peaceful scenes of him and his kid and his wife. And, you know, they're living their lives when he's not at work.
Yep.
And you know, like, okay, this is leading somewhere. What's going on? And eventually we see he's the person that is caught up in the middle of this big bust, this sting they're doing, which is off the record. You know, it's not a fully government sanctioned thing. They would literally, you know, be breaking laws doing this. And he gets killed for all of his trouble.
And what I thought was interesting, you know, the way they shot, the way they frame it in the story, he's not a bad guy.
No, he's a good guy.
And a lot of these people are, this is just kind of the world they live in. And it's really sad, you know, that they see all this machine gun fire, the kids are playing soccer, they stop, and then they keep playing. It's like, man, this world's crazy.
Right.
That is one thing I wanted to point out there. You have this scene, like Adam just described. You have this scene where all these boys are playing soccer. They have a soccer game, and all the moms are around, and some of the dads. Of course, the main boy and the mother, you know, kept looking around for the father, which never showed up. But they're playing soccer. Then all of a sudden you hear all this gunfire going on, automatic gunfire. And everybody stops. They look over in the direction. And then they look, they go back and they go back to playing soccer and cheering on the players. That is a horrible world to have to live in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, and think about as they going back towards the beginning more, when they transport their victim, whatever you want to call him, the guy from Mexico they transport over into the U.S., they get caught up on this bridge and they know there's going to be an attempt made to free this guy because he's a mid-ranking like brother of the head guy they're going after or something, trying to draw out this other guy out of hiding so that he'll get called back to the main kingpin and they'll know where he is and boom, you know, problem solved. And they get into this shootout where it's just random. I mean, cars everywhere. Think of a big traffic jam. And out of that, there's like three cars mixed in there that just these guys, even though the quote unquote good guys, you know, the CIA, FBI guys, they're armed to the teeth. They get out and they've got weapons pointing at them. They're like, look, don't do this. Stop. They still decide to pull it. They ends up being just a slaughter on the street. You know, and then they drive off and everyone around them is kind of cringing as it's happening. And then they just continue driving. It's
and the guys they had that actually, you know, that were with them, the escorts, the guys kind of leading the, I don't know if it was, they said part of Delta and some of the force that were with, you know, that took those guys out. You could tell the way they did this in this movie that these guys had just been down there for a long time. They know what they're doing.
Right.
They can catch these guys driving in cars just by looking at them. They know who's who. They're not uncomfortable with any of this stuff. It's just part of their job.
Right.
You know, that's crazy town.
Well, so looking at characters, we've got Emily Blunt as the main character. I don't have her name in front of me. Kate.
Kate Macer.
She's an FBI agent. And she gets sucked into all this because on the opening scene, like Adam mentioned, they find all those bodies. While the FBI is investigating, we meet Brolin's character, but they say he's just a consultant. She suspects he's with the CIA, but because of the laws, the CIA can't operate there without interagency and stuff like that. And as the movie goes on, you find out Josh Brolin is leading this kind of special off-the-books task force. And then we've got the character of Benicio del Toro. He's like...
The Sicario.
Yeah, he's Josh Brolin's lapdog, he calls him at one point. But you find out he's much more than that because he's really... Actually, they're setting him up to eliminate the competition so they can get stability in the region. He's right now kind of with this other Colombian cartel who they're looking to essentially put in power to calm things down, which is kind of weird. And his whole goal is to get back at the people who murdered his wife and child.
Yep.
And since you've mentioned Sicario a couple of times here, here's another dropping some. Flick facts. The word Sicario means hitman or gunman in Spanish. It also means paid assassin in Italian.
Ah.
Yeah, he's, like Dave mentioned, they're actually setting him up to be the big kingpin, possibly somebody that, you know, is more in their under their control, where
right.
they can control the flow of the drugs. I know they can't stop the drugs totally, but maybe if they can kind of limit the flow of it,
right?
That's what they're hoping to do. And I do have to say, he did a great job. Benicio del Toro, is that
Benicio del Toro?
Okay, fantastic job as his character. I can't remember what his character's name is.
Alejandro,
and then also Josh Brolin. I mean, I thought he did a great job.
Killer job.
Yeah, it is. Just dude, everybody, the only one that was really subdued, of course, was Emily Blunt. She was probably exactly what the script called for, probably exactly what the movie called for. But up against all these other actors, it just seemed like she was more subdued, more just, you know, not an outstanding performance, I should say.
There's a scene where she's trying to get it on with Shane from Walking Dead.
No, with the Punisher. John Barenthal. Okay.
But anyway, that goes south because he's already, you know, she looks down, she notices his keys have the same kind of ring on them, you know, rubberized ring from the cartel payoff.
Right. Yeah,
the money band, and right?
She realizes that he's bought. And so she ends up, you know, scuffling with him and he starts choking her out and just about kills her. It's like, I haven't watched the Punisher series, but John Bernthal is always playing these characters that are like, I don't like you. But I'm sure he's a pleasant guy, a real cool guy.
He's really chill when you listen to him.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it.
You know, yeah, he's. If you want to hear a good taste of him and who he is as a person, there's an episode, I believe it was an interview he did with Mark Maron on his WTF podcast, and it's about an hour and a half long chat, and it talks about, like, he's trained, like, the real famous acting schools out of Russia. I mean, he trained, like, hardcore, but he got into it a little later. No. He's from, like, New York or something. I can't remember where. But he actually, as a younger kid, in and out of trouble with the law and getting in fights and just doing stuff, you know, getting in trouble, mm-hmm. and had a moment where he realized he was a baseball player, actually, and got in trouble, ended up, you know, having to take some classes in college or whatever, you know, in the acting side of it, and found himself over in this, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a huge world-famous acting program based out of Russia. And it's hardcore. Like, when you think of the ballet over there, how they are, you know, really strict and, like, punishing, similar feel. And you know, the acting over there, it's all state controlled. So they had to basically hide it that they were doing it. It's a crazy story when you hear the interview with him, but he's a fantastic actor, but he always plays these kinds of characters. You're right.
So, yeah, that was another interesting scene. You think she's about to die.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Benicio Del Toro just kind of saunters in and puts a gun against him, and they reveal that they kind of used her as bait.
Right.
But she used herself.
Well, that's a scene. Now, I don't want to make this sound like I'm just shamelessly plugging, but I will mention this. This film, Jason talked about the visuals, and I did. I love the visual look of this so much and the work of Roger Deakins that I did my episode this week for Adventures in Creativity, all about a lot of the visual, kind of a deeper dive into just the visuals. There's no spoilers there. But there's mm-hmm. a scene when she meets John Barenthal in that bar. That's a great example of the visuals, how, you know, they've set it all up. She's had a heck of a day. You know, this whole film takes place in 3 days, and she's just been, like, her world is flipped upside down 100% in that span of that 3 days. And after seeing a lot of crazy stuff, her partner takes her out to this little honky-tonk bar, and they're finally, you know, it's like you get that moment to breathe, like, okay, this has been a brutal ride for her, and now they're trying to get her a little time to relax. And just through the visuals, like, you see all the people having fun, you see all this stuff going on, and then there's one shot where she's looking up at John Barenthal's character up at the bar and kind of thinking about, you know, oh, maybe I'll take him home tonight, whatever. You can tell it's kind of leading that way. And he does something with the lighting where he takes that warm neon glow, kind of friendly, relaxed atmosphere, and there's a wash of color on her face that's almost like it really distorts the way her face looks, and it's jarring. It's kind of tense, and it makes you think, like, okay, something's up here. What's going to happen? And it cuts right to them at her apartment then, and that's when everything goes south. It's such a brilliantly done visual. I can't even get into it.
So she has total trust in her partner,
right,
in this movie. Think about this for a second, though. She said, take me somewhere to get a drink. Yep. He takes her there. John Bernthal's character is already there.
Right.
And then she was supposed to be kind of used as bait. Was her partner in on it?
No, I don't think so, because he's pretty upset after, if you remember, where he's like, I thought he was a friend.
But was he in on it?
Well, that's the thing.
I'm just kidding. I just
Dave,
that thought.
But if you think, I didn't even think about that until Adam just brought it up. Her partner's the only one that knew about this bar. Nobody could predict where they would be going.
Well, that's true.
And
that's kind of
where and when. So, I mean, is this a continuity issue here?
Well, we'd have to watch the sequel to find out, but she's not in the sequel. Yeah.
No, she's not.
The partner seems pretty upset about it when it happens. But I did have that feeling, because the way this film goes, there's two emotional connections to this for me. I mean, yes, the action is cool and it's intense, but there's so much tension that builds and releases and builds in this film. But you have the main feeling of this whole questioning your moral ambiguity, like, is it really so wrong to step outside the law and do this, you know, to the people that are monsters that are acting like this? There's that whole what's wrong or right. And Jason, I think that plays a lot into why you thought her performance was so subdued. I actually disagree. I thought her performance was spot on and brilliant, because if you think about what she's been through, She goes one morning, finds this horror house with bodies in the walls. You know, there was, what, 50-some bodies or whatever, 30 bodies in that house. And it goes from that, and then the explosion that kills an officer right in front of her. She's in the explosion, and she's getting questioned, and she's sucked into this whirlwind, you know, with Brolin's task force and everything else, and seeing all this stuff and the shady stuff happening. She has to kill a guy in cold blood, basically, because he's trying to kill her. And it just gets so crazy that she's completely overwhelmed. She's questioning, I don't know what's right and what's wrong anymore. And I think that's where her character comes in. But you also get that whole feeling of, you know, who's the good guys here?
Yep.
You know, but, and that's with the partner. Who's going to turn on her?
Well, one of the weird, it's an interesting scene when she goes to talk to her FBI boss.
Right.
To complain about, you know, we want to be able to do this. We want to do that, be able to do this. And he says, you know what? We busted twice as many, you know, we had twice as many drug arrests and all these big things that happened the last 2 years. Do you feel that on the street? She's like, no. And he basically both reassures her that what she's doing is okay, but it's in a weird way that it's almost scary for the viewer to think about.
Right.
In that, you know, we operate within the law. Somebody way higher up than me that's elected decides where the borders are. The borders have changed. If you're worried that you are operating or doing something outside the boundaries, I'm telling you, you're not.
Right.
And so she gets that okay from her boss, like go ahead. You're still operating in this fashion, but then it makes you think, like, is this how it really is?
Yeah.
you know, we've all these laws and rules on how things happen, but you know what? We can really operate outside of it if you need to. Right. And in some cases, you know, think about like terrorism and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure there's something to that, but it was just kind of a strange, you know, like, oh, she's getting reassured that this is okay. Which for me, I'm going, oh, good. The movie can continue.
Now, you know who her boss was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in Legends of Tomorrow. He's been in a ton of stuff.
In The Flash.
I don't know. What was his name though?
I'm not sure what his name was, but what I was thinking the whole time is he should just join up with the other guy and they could take everybody out. Just fly
Firestorm,
off.
Yeah,
Firestorm.
I can't think of the actor's name off the top of my head, but he's been in a lot of stuff. I mean, the movie is just so full of these moments. I mean, you see that task force going in, and I mean, all the way up until the end point when they lead down. I mean, visually, like I said, I could talk for hours on this because, and I talked for a half hour on my show, my other show, and go listen to that if you want to hear me break down more of the visuals. I'd love to hear what you guys thought, any specific visual stuff here in a second. But the thing is, like, you get to see, though, kind of the other side of that coin where she's being given the okay from her boss saying higher up officials have just moved that boundary. But you also see how Brolin's task force, like, they almost are becoming the thing that they're trying to stop too. You know, they're treating it as, oh, we're going hunting, you know, and they're taking enjoyment out of this. And you don't I mean,
their goal was to shake things up.
Well, yeah, because we saw that scene. She's on a rooftop after the extraction, and they really shook things up that first time. And the one guy comes up there and he's like, hey, you want to see something cool? Look over there. And he hands her binoculars and you see like rockets and, you know, tracer fire and just all out mayhem going on in Juarez, Mexico as dusk sets. And it's crazy. But this is one question real quick. I want to go to a specific scene because I want to ask you guys what you think.
And by the way, the guy's name was Victor Garber, her boss.
Victor Garber. Yep. And so they've got their captive from Juarez, and they're going to interrogate him. He's not talking because he doesn't speak English. So Alejandro comes in, and he's going to interrogate him. Now, they shut off the camera. The other guy leaves the room, and it's just Brolin and Alejandro and this guy they captured.
And the water jug.
And a big, giant water jug. And Alejandro's character, he's standing really, like, he gets up in his face, straddling his leg. What did he do? I mean, they don't really show you how they tortured him to get the info.
I'm assuming that they probably use that water jug to, like, smash his hands or his feet.
Sure, they just waterboarded him.
Yeah, I was thinking waterboarding or borderline drowning him. But then the way he was standing, you know, I was like, is he making that?
His face?
Yeah, I was like, is he making that guy give him head?
No, it's just it's an intimidation.
I was like, what kind of this is crazy.
He was establishing dominance.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on here? And they never tell you if that guy's alive after either.
Hey, now here's the scene that you just brought up here. Before he carried that water bottle in there, he was talking to another person outside of the room, like they are in cahoots or whatever. And I, of course, I didn't know what was going on at this point. And I'm like, oh man, is he double crossing the FBI?
Right.
Are they all, did they get them all over here for a reason and now they're going to do something? Because it kind of seemed like they were talking, planning something outside of the FBI's opt here. And when he got a drink of water, then he grabbed a jug of water and carried it in. I'm thinking, is that thing full of gasoline or something? Is he gonna like burn everybody up or blow? Is he making a some type of explosion that's gonna kill everybody?
Right. No. All that was he was a guy in the Mexican government that was there because he was supposed to be there because they had a Mexican citizen they were going to interrogate. And he tells him, nope, stay out here. It's easier for you to deny anything because you won't have seen anything.
Guerrera?
No, I don't know what his name was. I can't remember. But they're talking about the guy's family and kids and everything. So
Adam?
What?
He said deny, and I said Guerrera?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
What does that mean?
From Walking Dead and also from...
Guerrera?
Deny Guerrera. She's also...
her name is Denai.
Denai, and her last name is Guerrera. She is Michonne from The Walking Dead, and she's also in the MCU movies. She's one of the Wakanda women. Oh my gosh! If I have to explain this joke, that was awesome.
That one went over my head. My apologies, but I mean that's what was going on in that scene. Now the same thing happens. We don't know if he lives or dies, but. Think about the Punisher, well, John Barenthal's character, his buddy there. They get to him in a car as well, and they start interrogating him. And it's not really clear if he ever makes it out of the backseat of that car.
I don't think he did, honestly.
I mean, and that's what makes it... I'm such
an idiot. I never realized that that was the same actress between Marvel and Walking Dead. And is it just because her head was... She was bald?
She's bald in the movie.
I was just thinking like, holy crap, I didn't even have to look it up. Yeah.
I know who you're talking about there, but yeah.
Sorry, she's Jason.
And it was the greatest joke ever.
Yeah, she was awesome.
Can't think of the character's name, but yeah. I mean, they don't ever explain it. I think that's what adds to the feeling of tension because through the whole movie, we know who Emily Blunt's character is, and she's one of these FBI agents that's just trying to do good in the world. Her and her partner seem to be on that path. Brolin's team and his task force, you get the feeling early on. From the very beginning, they almost set it up, even though it's a small detail, when he's sitting in this high-level meeting wearing flip-flops. Mm-hmm. You kind of got the idea like, okay, this guy, he's going to be playing some kind of rogue agent of some sort that's doing something kind of off the books. Who knows where this is going.
And he's chewing gum the whole time, too.
Yeah, and you never know if he's actually the bad guy. Because they kind of make you feel at times when they're talking about going after this main kingpin, almost like one of them is going to turn out to be that kingpin and no one knows it. Like there's a big twist coming.
I originally thought Benicio del Toro's character would be either the big guy or he's part of his group and he was just infiltrating the FBI to like, kind of like keep tabs on him and maybe... Try to blow everything up from inside.
Right. And so his character remains a mystery, though, the whole time. What is he doing? What is he after? Who is he working for? All of that. And she catches him in the tunnel. She went down the wrong direction. Well, I think she followed him on purpose and saw what he was doing, pulled a gun on him, told him to freeze. He shoots her, knowing she has a vest on, and tells her calmly, don't ever point a gun at me again or a weapon at me again. And he takes the police officer who's in on the drug dealing, who was the father from earlier. They go to apprehend the second in command, the brother of the kingpin, who's a ghost. And that's when all that happens. But we don't find out until he's on that mission. When she comes out of that tunnel and Brolin, she's like, I'm going to tell everybody what you're doing. And Roland's character.
So stupid. You do not tell a quote-unquote bad guy, you know what, I'm going to blow this up. You know you're going to die.
Yeah. I thought he was.
He only has one
him.
Choice. A bad guy only has one choice. I got to take him out.
She didn't talk at the end.
No, and I thought she was going to kill her, but he tells her, look, you know, here's what's going on. He's going after this. And that's when we get kind of the speech, if I remember right, how they're going to bring stability back by, you know, instead of having warring factions, they're taking out the factions and they're going to let this one Colombian faction take control. That's who that guy's working for, Alejandro, that mm-hmm. is. And we find out, that's when we find out he's all about the revenge, you know, because they beheaded his wife and beheaded his wife and burned his daughter in acid or vice versa. Yeah. And he's going after this ghost character, this kingpin, and he finds him at dinner with his family. And that scene is chilling, man.
Oh. It is brutal. And, you know, unfortunately, I understand why he did it, because he wanted the guy to feel the same pain he felt before he killed him. But then you're thinking about it, and just do something to him, just torture him horribly or something. But why, you know, kids and the wife.
To me, that's the sign that the Sicario character has gone way too far already and past the point of no return. Nothing's going to stop him from his mission. And he used that as a point. He lets the main bad guy sit there for just a little bit to feel it.
Well, yeah, because
it was brutal.
He's sitting there talking to the guy in English, because the kids don't understand English, I guess. The wife must have, because she could hear and she kept wincing.
Yeah, you could see that she was understanding.
The father is telling the kids, eat, eat, keep eating, you know, and hoping he can kind of talk his way out of it. And all of a sudden, Alejandro just goes, you know, in Spanish, he starts talking in Spanish again, and he says, time to meet God. And with just a flick of his wrist, I mean, he doesn't hardly move, just a quick flick left and right, bam, 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 three shots, and the camera pulls out, and you see all three of them dead, and the father is just, you know, taken aback and kind of freaking out. But I think this is kind of interesting, Adam, what you just said about how he's gone too far. When you look at it, we're used to thinking that, because in a lot of ways, even though he's more covert about it, Alejandro is very much playing the role of like a Punisher, which is kind of ironic given the actors here. Mm-hmm. The difference is the Punisher takes it so far, and then he gets reeled in by usually kind of visions from his family or remembering something like, I can't become that monster. You know, vengeance doesn't always satisfy, all this stuff. He has this kind of superhero mentality about it, even though he's a very anti-hero. Like he's doesn't want to be a hero, but he kind of has that, you know, comic book, I know right from wrong thing going. Right. In this case, they're portraying this completely vile world. And the guy's talking to him about how he killed his wife and daughter and just saying, look, it's nothing personal. It's just business, blah, blah, blah. I don't think he went too far at all in that respect, because I think after what was taken from him, he had two missions. One was to get back, and he wanted to take that guy's life and make him suffer at least a portion as much as he did from losing his family. But the other thing was, he's going to kill him. That's why Jason, he can't just torture him and torture him and torture him, because if that guy's still alive, he's still running that cartel. And he has to kill him, because that way the other group can come in, take power, and kind of settle things down.
Well, I think what Jason's saying, though, is the killing of children is too far.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for you or I or any logical person who's not in that world, absolutely, I can't imagine doing that. You know what I mean?
Even
from the standpoint of like, I think about like, you know, what if something happened
it's unexpected.
Yeah.
That he did that.
And it's brutal, but it's so, like, to me, I almost, it's weird. This is that moral ambiguity part of it, because I could imagine that feeling of, if someone did something to your family, you'd want that revenge and you'd want that. And I could almost feel like I could see why he did that.
And you'll find out more in Sicario Day of the Soldado, the sequel.
Yeah, and so it's...
Have you seen that one, Adam?
It's one of those tense things.
I'm going to have to watch it again, because I think I was half asleep watching that one. But guys, let's give this a rating. Our rating structure, of course, is between 0 to 5 soup spoons or stars.
Right.
And with, you know, five stars or five soup spoons being the top, one being we hated it.
Sure. Now, the one thing I know Jason had asked us to do, he wanted us to talk briefly about how we do our ratings. Like, what are we looking at individually here when we do our ratings?
Oh, okay.
So, well, just what the numbers mean, because I'm sure the numbers mean something different to each of us.
Yeah.
So okay. We're not on the same scope here. And I'll go quickly just through mine right away. 5 to me is the perfect movie. There is no way this movie could be any better. This is the upper echelon of the cinema. 4 is a fantastic movie. Maybe it has a couple of flaws here or there, but overall, this is a great movie. It's just like a 5, but with a few flaws. I find a 3, at least this is the way I believe, a 3 is a completely average movie. It is good. It probably has some bad in it too, but it's a good movie. I would definitely recommend a 3 to people, because this is probably what the majority of most of the movies we watch are.
So
we don't walk away in awe, but we don't walk away going, oh, that was crap.
All right,
we,
quick question
we really
for you.
Enjoy the 3.
Quick what? Question for you. At a number 3, would a number 3 for you be something you would watch again?
Possibly. If you're wanting to know, a 4 and a 5 is definitely always a must rewatch.
Okay.
A three
is more.
I would say overall, everything that I've rated a 3, I probably wouldn't watch again.
So 3 is you recommend seeing it at least once, but
yes,
not necessarily rewatching. And obviously 2 and under, we know what those are.
Yeah, a 1 is definitely, yeah, I don't recommend it. And a 2 is, I mean, I guess if you're completely bored, you're strapped to a bed with your eyes strapped open, and you have to watch something, go ahead and watch a 2.
So I'm really similar, except for my scoring mechanism, the 5 isn't the ultimate perfect movie, because I don't think it's possible sometimes.
Right.
There's always
That's
room for improvement
I don't give
somewhere.
Them.
Well, it's exactly. So I want to be able to give something a 5 to say that I liked it better than a 4. but I don't want to make it unreachable. So anyway, that's me.
Yeah. So where does 3 sit for you, Adam, as far as...
For me, it's average. I could watch it again maybe if I need to.
Right.
Or if it's on TV and I'm bored.
Right.
But 3 is, you know, I've rated some things, some 3s.
Right.
So yeah, just kind of average.
Well, and for me, I guess I'm pretty similar, but I kind of look at it this way. I'm like, okay, 4s and 5s, I always think like it has to be better than Tusk to get that level.
The Tusk factor for Dave.
I'm just kidding. No,
you liked it better than Kevin Smith, probably.
No, for me, it's very much never ever about comparing. Okay, so I like this movie, but I gave, you know, like we use Tusk as an example. I gave Tusk a 4. If I give this movie a 4, do I like it just as much? I never compare it to other movies. So for me, you know, 5, I agree with you, Adam. There's never going to be an absolutely perfect movie with zero flaws. A 5 to me is just simply, when I watched this, how did I feel afterwards? Was I immediately feeling like, yeah, I could definitely watch that again in a couple days? You know, and 4 is kind of in that same thing where it's like, hey, give me a couple months. I definitely want to watch it again. 3, like you said, very average, but I'll probably watch it at least one more time because, you know, maybe I missed something or whatever else, but I recommend seeing it at least once or twice. Below that, it's steaming crap. So,
all right. So now that we got that out of the way, Jason, what is your score?
I'm going to give this movie a 3. I don't believe it's above average. It's probably not a movie I'll ever watch again, but I did enjoy it, and I would recommend it to others.
Okay. Jason goes to 3.
Are you writing these down, Adam?
I can, yep.
Just in the show notes there or whatever?
Yep. Okay. So 3 for Jason. Dave?
Yes, that's a lot of typing for just a number 3.
I mistyped it 80 times.
For me, I'm going to give this movie a very high 4, borderline 5. And mainly because, number one, the story was, I mean, it's a brutal, hard story. It's not like something that you're going to leave feeling good, but it makes you think a lot about stuff. So you've got a lot of these really interesting story elements. Love the acting and the character development, but because of the visuals as well, this movie hit me in a way visually that I'm inspired by a lot of movies, but this one really, really was something that just really struck a chord with me. So because of the visuals combined with that story, very close to a 5. I almost want to give it a 5, but not quite.
Well, and I'm going to give this a 5 because if I gave Avengers Endgame a 5, I did.
Did I give it a 3?
You didn't give it a score yet.
What did I give Endgame?
Yeah, that's right. Change mine to a 5, Adam, because I agree. I did enjoy it. The more I think about it, I'm going to give it a 5.
Well, I got to balance this out. Change mine to 1.
Yeah, and I mean, the story was so, I'm just thinking, like, what were the flaws that I would change?
Well, that's just it. I thought, what would I change in this movie? And I can't think of anything.
Jason, why don't you, since you gave it a 3, we talked a lot about stuff we loved. What about it didn't you love? What would you change that would have brought that score up for you?
Well, I don't know if I'd really change anything. I mean, I did enjoy the movie. Like I said, when I was talking about my criteria here, will I ever see this movie again? Well, I don't. There's so...
The missing factor in our scoring system that we're talking about, how much you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That, you know, how much did you like watching the movie? Right.
I did enjoy it.
What would it take for this movie? Like, if it had done something different, what would it be? Because obviously, I mean, if you're rating it a 3, you say you enjoyed it, but you're only giving it a 3, which means you had problems with it, or there's something that you didn't really enjoy, you didn't love.
It could be the genre, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if Jason's not a fan of this particular genre movie...
I'm not big into drugs like you guys, so it's a little bit different for me. No, if the only thing I would change that would probably boost it up is if it had a little bit, if the reveal at the end that they were putting him into power, you know, if it would have been more of a surprise, because you kind of always felt that he wasn't a good guy. Through a lot of this, especially with, you know, some of the torture scenes that you didn't really see it, but, you know, I guess the one where he was beating up, Punisher in the car. Yeah, that was, you know, you saw that. But you knew he wasn't a good guy early on. Now, if he would have been playing, like, a really good guy, helping out the FBI, all this kind of stuff, and you just thought overall he was a great guy, and then you see, no, this guy is a ruthless,
Jason wanted a twist.
This is interesting.
Yeah, a twist, but not necessarily an M. Night Shyamalan, but more of a, it hit you, it gut punched you at the very end. It's something you did not expect at all through the entire movie, where, you know, halfway through it, you
didn't
understand
expect him to murder the
on.
Whole family and then put a gun up against Emily Blunt's
mouth. No, I didn't.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. It's interesting to me that you say that, because throughout the whole movie, he's acting very protective. Like, he's not necessarily of the FBI as a whole, but he's really watching out for her. But you also, you get this feeling like he's got a dark past. He's willing to go to a dark place. You don't know why he's driven to do what he's doing.
There's nothing he won't do for the cause at this point.
But even early on, Emily Blunt was kind of grilling him about, who are you? Yeah. So... the movie let you know that he isn't a good guy. And I guess that's the only thing I was, you know, you said pick out something, Jason, which would make this even more, give you the higher score, 4 or 5. That is what it would have been if this would have been more of a gut punch at the end.
This is wolf country now, and you're not a wolf.
We're at a level of 4.3, so we're going to say serve this one up. We all enjoyed the movie, just on different levels, but we think we all agree it was beautifully shot, had some great scenes, was very intense. This one was a fun one to review and talk about. I really enjoyed this, guys.
Absolutely. So what are we watching next?
That's a good question.
The movie that I picked here is a movie that I actually watched almost a decade ago, 3/4 through, and then for some reason, I don't know if it was the mood I was in or I just wasn't able to focus on it, but I got really lost in the story, and I'm like, all right, I just got to stop this and watch it another day. Never went back to it. I've always wanted to do it because ever since over the last decade, I've heard just good stuff about it, and I'm like, it's about time I go back to it. Inception from 2010.
Yeah, I'd watch that again.
Yeah, and you guys probably remember this really well, but I don't know what was going on with me that day. I don't know if it was something to do with, you know,
maybe
work
you were
or
dreaming.
Whatever. No, I literally watched maybe a half to three quarters of it. I got lost somewhere. I don't think I was paying attention, and stuff was going on, and I'm like, dude, I don't even know what's going on right now. I just have to stop it, and I was going to rewatch it another day, and I never got back to it.
Well, a little upcoming film fact for you. I know we've all kind of seen this movie at times, but pay attention to the visuals in this one because you've got Christopher Nolan and the excellent cinematographer Wally Pfister working on this film, and they've
Venom's in it. It's pretty awesome.
They do some amazing stuff with the visuals. I'm excited for this. This should be good.
All right, so it's a good pick. Good pick.
Right. Yes, this should be good.
Hey, you guys don't hate me. Yes.
We'll see if you start whining.
I'm sure we'll give it a 3.
Yeah. We'll see if a week and a half away from the episode recording, if you're whining trying to get out of watching it.
Hey, should we do some app recommendations?
Yeah.
Ooh, I got to say it. I say it every week. I like apps. All right, well, let me go ahead and do my app first because, you know, I wrote it first on the screen, so I'll go first. All right, my app recommendation is something that I use every year. I'm going to be using it again this coming July, is TripAdvisor. This is an awesome app here. It is, of course, it's for people who are going on vacation, etc. It allows you to find, like, you know, hotels, flights. But what I use it for is not only does it do my whole itinerary for my trip, but no matter where I'm at, when I'm driving, I pull it up and it'll list all the local restaurants, gas stations, etc. to where I'm at that point. It uses the GPS location. And so, like, if we're, you know, on the way there, I could find restaurants, you know, gas stations, et cetera. Or when we're there, I could find great restaurants, you know, gas stations, et cetera. But it does a it's not just the gas station restaurant.
It's a gas station.
But
yeah, there's already Google Maps for some of that.
Yeah,
stuff.
It does a lot of great stuff for that. But it just it's something I've been using for years. And it's available for Android and iOS, and it's completely free. So there's no reason why you shouldn't try it.
Cool. My app today is going to be a 99-cent app called PhotoTrap. And this is a security application, and it's made for change detection. What I mean by that is if you're worried that somebody's tampering with your stuff, you basically take a position, take a picture. And this app will allow you to find the same spot basically that you were at last time, eyeball it up, take another picture, and see if anything's been moved. And you can zoom in and kind of basically it has somebody tampered with my stuff. You can see if a pencil moved on your desk. You can see if somebody has opened one of your drawers and let a piece of paper fall out. It's kind of interesting. And it's for those, you know, if you're staying in a hotel somewhere and you're worried about the staff there or anything like that. It's pretty interesting. Now, the thing that is different from just taking a picture and then taking another picture later and trying to side-by-side them, this will overlay the two pictures together, you know, in with some transparency so you can look for those.
Now, does it notice the differences for you, or do you still have to find it?
You still have to use your own eyes.
So it's sort of like that old game where it's like, find the differences spot in the difference. Picture.
Except in this case, it's overlaid, and you can switch back and forth. Between the pictures.
It should automatically highlight any differences in the picture because
it's only 99 cents.
Okay, $1.99, will it do it at that point then?
Let me check.
No. It's called PhotoTrap.
PhotoTrap. It's from a company called Escape the Wolf.
Very cool. Escape the Wolf.
Yep.
That's cool.
That's my app. Dave, what do you got?
Well, I've got an app. It's called the Muscle Hustle.
Oh, that's a dating app for strongmen.
No, it is not. It's actually a very, very fun and kind of addicting game. It combines elements of like WWE style wrestling with fictional characters.
Oh, yeah.
With the elements of playing pool. And so you'd have to look at it.
Wrestling and pool.
It sounds so bizarre, but the way it works, you get your characters. Now, I am going to warn you, I've played a bunch of this, and you are going to hit a point where it gets very difficult unless you want to pay to play. A lot of that kind of stuff. It's not impossible. You just got to be patient. But they do definitely want you to try and buy upgrades and all of the stuff. But the premise is you get your stable of wrestlers. You go through all these matches and individual challenges, all this other stuff. And the way that they fight, you're looking into a ring kind of top down, and all of your wrestlers are represented almost like tokens. So if you remember, what was that game you used to, like Pogs? Is that old game in the 90s or whatever?
I never played it either,
but you get like these tokens, which have a picture of your wrestler and their rating and stuff like that. Every wrestler has moves that build up and things you can do. But how you fight is you basically touch and drag on the screen like you're pulling back a pool cue, and then you release it, and your wrestling token, your wrestler's token goes bouncing off the ropes and into the other thing. That's how you do damage, is slamming into the opponents. And, you know, characters have different moves. Like the one character, if he's a teammate of yours and you bounce him into a corner on your turn, he'll actually do bonus damage by jumping off a top rope, for example, and landing on a bad guy.
Doing the Hulk Hogan leg drop?
Kind of. It's just all tokens, you know, it's like that. It's a very weird concept. When I first saw it, I was like, what is this? But it's actually strangely fun because you're not having to try and control some actual wrestling moves and movement and stuff via some virtual controls. It's literally just one finger clicking, you know, pull back and aim your arrow where you want it to go, much like you're playing pool, and let it go and try and calculate so you can get the most damage on multiple enemies and stuff like that. So it's actually fun. Very fun.
So we got a fun game added to our list. Yeah. I should mention that Photo Trap one that I talked about is iOS only.
What? Okay.
So, yeah.
Half of the users cannot use it.
I know. I'm sorry, folks. What time is it?
It's time for a geek off.
All right, so we're going to blast through a geek off for you because, as with all of our Super Reviews episodes, they get a little bit longer. I figured this was fitting to go with our review of Sicario, though. I want to give you some matchups of the best kind of FBI, CIA kind of gangster type movies. We're going to, in that genre, I don't know what you'd call that genre, like law enforcement thrillers, maybe?
Sure. Fangsters.
Maybe. So that's what we're going to do here. So first
or up. Or bangsters. For no. Bangsters.
That sounds like a bad site children should never visit.
Terrible.
So first up, here's the first matchup for you. I want to know which one you choose, the better of these two, the classic film Face Off with John Travolta, Nicolas Cage, versus Silence of the Lambs.
Oh.
Starling? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm
saying who is the best or FBI? Who is the better FBI agent?
Nope, just which was the better movie in your opinion?
Well, Silence of the Lambs.
Which did you enjoy more?
Probably better movie, but
what was the other movie?
Kind of creepy too. So.
Which would you enjoy watching more?
Okay, let's
put it that
way. What
were
the two again?
Face Off. are you? Yeah, you must not listen.
No, I forgot what it was already.
RoboCop.
No. Face Off versus Silence of the Lambs.
Which would I watch more than once? Actually, I think I'm going to go with Face Off. I'd watch more than once.
Okay. And Adam, you said what?
I'll go with Silence of the Lambs, even though it's more jarring.
Gotcha. So we got a split. Audience is going to have to weigh in, I guess.
Yep.
Next one, Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hanks versus the classic Point Break.
Point Break.
I would have to go with Point Break because I never saw the other movie.
100% pure adrenaline. You know, Catch Me If You Can was okay, but not as good as
it's,
I wanted it to
be. It's slower paced. Yeah,
it's much slower paced.
It's very good film, but very slow.
Did you see the sequel to Catch Me If You Can?
Where he caught me if you could?
No, it was called Catch Me Outside. How about that?
Oh, she's making terrible. Lots of money now and is like a
bad baby.
Anyway.
Yay. All right.
Horrible
next one
singer.
Up.
Go ahead.
Next one up, The Departed versus Gangs of New York.
Ooh. Haven't seen either of them.
Oh man, those are both pretty good, but Gangs of New York I will watch over and over again.
Yeah. Yep. Don't they both star DiCaprio too?
I think so. Hey, and the movie we're gonna watch next month stars DiCaprio too.
Nice. I'm gonna give this one. That's a tough one, man. I'm gonna go Departed myself since Jason hasn't seen it. I'll weigh in on that.
Is that Dearly?
No, it's a monster cast. It's just a lot of fun. Okay. All right, next one up, the movie Seven versus No Country for Old Men.
I haven't seen No Country for Old Men, but I do know what it's all about. But Seven was just amazing.
No Country for Old Men here because. Seven's weird. But No Country for Old Men, if you want to talk a movie that has a similar uncomfortable feeling like Sicario, go check that one out.
That's also, what I heard. Yeah. People tell me to see it. I just haven't seen it yet.
There's a scene fantastic. In that movie where the weird guy is at a gas station, and you just get so uncomfortable watching and listening to him talk. It's just...
Dah. And he gets that weird limp as the movie goes on. Yep. Flipping his coin. Yeah, it's a. I would say in that one, Seven's a great classic, but No Country for Old Men is much deeper.
What's in the box?
Yeah. Last one. I want to put up a series versus a series of movies because they both involve kind of secret. No, they both involve kind of multiple arcing series here. So we're going to go with Mission Impossible series with Tom Cruise versus the current lineup of James Bond series.
You know,
I'm not talking all the way back to
Connery. Yeah, I'm going to answer first just because I've really, really, really enjoyed the Mission Impossibles. I haven't seen the latest one yet, but I have enjoyed all of them. And I got to tell you, I have only seen probably a handful of James Bond movies. And most of them were the more recent ones. And, I mean, they were okay and stuff, but I'd rather watch Austin Powers.
Jeez. I'm going to go with Mission Impossible as well. They're more fun.
Gotcha. All right, that was the Geek Off. Listeners, if you've got a favorite in all of those, let us know. We'd love to hear from you on it.
Absolutely. And we want to thank you guys for sticking around and listening to today's show. For all things Digital Soup, head on over to digitalsouppodcast.com. Be sure to listen and subscribe anywhere where you can listen to podcasts, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, TuneIn, you name it. You could probably subscribe to
iHeartRadio.
iHeartRadio. Leave us a review. Tell a friend about us. We'd love to chat with you guys on our social media. Hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. You know the drill, digitalsouppodcast.com. From all of us at the Digital Soup Podcast, all of you listeners have an awesome week. We will catch you next time.
Take care, guys.
Later, Shane Punisher.
Getting beat up, Gator.
Yeah. It's the Digital Soup Podcast. Ha ta 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 tee.